Hello, I'm Dr. Chuck Vega, and welcome to Critical Issues in Obesity. I'm a clinical professor of family medicine at the University of California at Irvine, and once again, for our tripartite series, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Carolyn Apovian. She's a professor of medicine and pediatrics at Boston University School of Medicine. She is also the director of nutrition and weight management at Boston Medical Center. Carolyn, excellent to have you back again. One more time.
Here, Chuck.
All right, we're going to be talking about bariatric surgery this time. And so we've had two great discussions on obesity thus far. First, we assessed dietary interventions to promote weight loss, and we also reviewed the new medications indicated to treat obesity. But unfortunately, many patients fail these interventions and they remain obese. They may suffer from complications of obesity, such as diabetes and cardiovascular disease. And these patients certainly may be considered for a more dramatic, in my opinion, intervention, and that's bariatric surgery. The increase in the application of bariatric surgery has been nothing short of remarkable in the past 15 years. In 2013, the American Society for Metabolic and Bariatric Surgery reported that there were over 175,000 bariatric procedures performed in the United States. And that's a 15% increase from the same rate in 2011. Sleeve gastrectomy, for the first time, emerged as the most common procedure formed. Now, the widespread use of bariatric surgery makes sense in that it can be highly effective. A review of studies of bariatric surgery with 5 years of follow-up found that the risks of type 2 diabetes and hyperlipidemia were reduced by two-thirds after bariatric surgery, and the risk of hypertension was nearly cut in half. And long-term quality of life generally appears to improve after bariatric surgery. At the same time, there are associated risks with bariatric surgery. Approximately 2% of gastric bypass procedures leak, with similar rates regardless of whether patients receive a Roux-en-Y or a gastric sleeve procedure. And the risk of mortality in the perioperative period is not inconsequential. So, Carolyn, from your perspective, as somebody who treats many patients with difficult-to-manage obesity, what patient best fits the profile for bariatric surgery?
That's a very good question, Chuck. Really, we go along with the guidelines, which, first of all, you look at the BMI. If the BMI is over 40 or over 35 with a serious comorbidity, they are candidates for bariatric surgery. The candidate needs to understand what bariatric surgery actually does.
Right.
So there needs to be an understanding that it's not a panacea, that it's not, you're going to be able to change the gut hormone milieu, and patients really need to understand that the signals coming from the gut are going to change,
Right.
going to the hypothalamus, and it is going to improve satiety, increase satiety with smaller amounts of food. That's how the procedure works. There may be an additional factor involved in patients who resolve their type 2 diabetes pretty quickly after surgery. Those mechanisms are still not, haven't been elucidated completely, but the patient needs to understand that as well. And beyond that, patients who have struggled all their life, who have been on diet and medication treatment programs or diet and lifestyle programs and have been able to lose weight but failed to maintain it. Those are all good candidates for bariatric surgery, but the main focus is still the BMI and then the comorbidities. And the patient with early onset diabetes or the patients who've had diabetes for 7 years or less, something like that, are the perfect candidates if
Right.
the BMI is over 35.
Because they haven't suffered the complications in general, nephropathy, retinopathy have yet to set in for those patients, so it really can make a difference in terms of morbidity and mortality for them in the long run, correct?
Well, it's really about the predictor of resolution. You want the
Okay.
best chance for the diabetes to be resolved.
Right.
And those patients who've had very severe diabetes or diabetes for longer than, say, 7 years, don't remit as often as those who've had diabetes for less long, less severe diabetes. So, there is a relapse rate after about 5 years, but at least you have, if you choose the patient wisely, you have the possibility of resolution for at least 5 years after surgery.
What are some of the factors that result in that rebound effect where patients gain weight again after 5 years? What have you seen in your clinical practice?
Well, it's most people do gain weight after surgery. The weight gain is if it's less than 10% of their original weight loss, that's the typical. It's still considered successful surgery.
Right.
But the body's set point changes, and the body's set point changes because gut hormones are changed, and there are less hunger hormones going to the brain, and satiety hormones are secreted earlier, and there are higher levels of those hormones. But the body is just settling into another lower body set point.
And
the environment hasn't changed. And so if you don't change the environment, eventually the original signals that affect all of us, that cause us to eat more and exercise less in this environment, are still there. So you're basically changing your body, but you haven't changed the environment. And we think that obesity is an epigenetic phenomenon.
Okay.
So, you know, eventually patients will regain some weight. If they gain a significant amount of weight, then it's important to intensify the lifestyle changes and maybe add a medication or two afterwards and not wait too long. So usually patients will hit their nadir weight loss at about 12 to 18 months. And after that, they start to regain some weight, and
it creeps back.
It's always, it's part of any good program to reinstitute lifestyle changes after that time period.
I have a feeling I know the answer to this one, but is there a particular type of bariatric surgery that you prefer? Or do you really just leave it up to the patient?
Well, we certainly suggest to the patient which one that we recommend for them. Typically, patients with diabetes, we try to gear towards the Roux-en-Y gastric bypass because that has the best results in terms of resolution of diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps patients who have a lot of reflux might want to stay away from the sleeve gastrectomy.
Okay.
Because you do get reflux after that procedure. However, many patients are interested in the sleeve gastrectomy because they perceive it to be a less aggressive procedure.
Right.
Surgeons find it easier, and it's become the most common procedure in the United States. Whereas before it was always the Roux-en-Y gastric bypass.
Mm-hmm.
And
also, you know, the laparoscopic banding too was also very popular for a number of years. We look back like 5 or 6 years ago.
It was popular. It was considered to be a procedure that's reversible. It's a device. However, results have not really shown maintenance of a good enough weight loss for many surgeons and patients, and it's fallen out of favor, unfortunately. I think it is a good procedure still for a certain type of patient.
Sure.
Certainly not the patient who wants to lose 100 pounds, because it's going to be hard to do with the lap band. It doesn't really change the anatomy at all. It's a device that's placed around the stomach, and you get satiety because you are creating a smaller pouch so that not a lot of food can get through, and you get satiety, but you really don't change a lot of the gut hormones that are changed after the Roux-en-Y bypass and even the sleeve gastrectomy.
So you mentioned that a really great concept, and that, you know, you're changing the body's set point. So this is something that patients just aren't used to. There's no way they could have become accustomed to this, because this is going to be something that's different for them in terms of the feelings of satiety and some of the hormonal changes that that follow it as well, particularly in that, yeah, I think that first 6 month period. Some of my patients really struggled with that. I think it, overall, and maybe it's the gastrointestinal side effects or the cultural issues, the social issues around food consumption. I'm not sure that, you know, that all my patients would agree that, you know, the surgery has improved their quality of life, even if it has maybe cured their diabetes or significantly improved their hypertension. What's been your clinical experience in terms of just the day in, day out function and the way patients feel about their surgery after getting it? And I'm thinking particularly about gastric reduction procedures in which there's really, it's more of a permanent solution.
Well, if you, you know, that's exactly the reason why most centers of excellence have a pre-op program that lasts about 5 to 6 months at least to prepare the patient for the drastic lifestyle change that they will undergo after right. having surgery. So because you're creating a small pouch and a bypass of the duodenum and jejunum, you simply cannot eat the way you used to ever again. And there are certain high sugary foods and regular soda that you really can't have anymore because of dumping syndrome.
Right.
So, if, you know, and we, and this is a screening process, and those patients who don't seem to want to do that or are unable to do that, we generally don't recommend to go through the procedure. So that's why you have a really intensive preoperative program. Because if you don't do that and you patients undergo surgery and they're not expecting to have dumping syndrome and to feel sick after they eat the, you know, perhaps the way they're used to, they will really have a lot of GI upset, nausea, vomiting, and they will develop nutritional deficiencies that are emergencies and can become permanent if not picked up as soon as possible. Most notably, thiamine deficiency, which causes Wernicke-Korsakoff encephalopathy and can lead to permanent nerve damage. And so we've seen several cases of this in this country in patients who really have a lot of nausea, vomiting after the procedure, and really and either don't follow up or the care team doesn't pick up on the classic signs and symptoms.
Right.
So it's a procedure that, you know, has its risks and benefits. But it's just the same as having, similar to having a coronary artery bypass graft. You don't expect the patient to go out and run a marathon 2 weeks after they have surgery. So, you know, you still have a lifestyle change that you have to get over.
Of course.
Patients who do well after a CABG, for example, undergo cardiac rehab.
Right.
Right. So, same is true of a gastric bypass. It's not a quick fix. It's not a panacea. Major lifestyle change.
You're right. And so the benefit versus a CABG of doing gastric bypass is you can preload all that information and patients can make a very, very informed choice about it. As they find out more, you know, they might find out that it's not for them and therefore they want to think about other treatments and they go back to lifestyle medications. That's perfectly reasonable. But, you know, it's interesting to be having this conversation with you in January, which is when a lot of people set their resolutions. And one of those resolutions might be, hey, I just saw an ad on this web page, and I think I'm going to get my gastric bypass and finally lose that weight because I made this resolution to lose weight 5 years running. And, you know, I'm going to do it now. So they sign up for a program. Program schedules them for surgery in February. That's completely inappropriate. So it's time to get educated. It's time to prepare. Because I think just as important as the surgery, the surgeon and the center and the procedure itself, that follow-up, as you mentioned, both in terms of monitoring for safety as well as tolerability, is absolutely critical. And that starts with a good relationship with their treating physician, and then a relationship with a practice that can provide them the education that they need. As you said, a center of excellence really should take that role very seriously in prepping their patients for bariatric surgery. And hopefully our audience feels fully prepared to take on the disease of obesity. Carolyn, your insights were absolutely invaluable. Thank you so much. And look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Same here, Chuck. Glad to be here.
All right. Thank you, everybody, and have a wonderful clinic day.